It is The Blitz, Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 4 here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmar here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today, as he's kind enough to take time every week to hop onto the program, Arif Hassani covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage and the Daily Norseman. You can find much of his work at those two outlets. Go to zonecoverage.com. Click on the Vikings link at the top of the page. Arif, thank you as always for setting aside time. We had brought up the Alex Boone getting pulled in preseason game 3 while most starters stayed in topic last week. I don't think anyone saw him getting cut as the next step when the rosters got trimmed down to 53. That's what ended up happening. Where was the surprise level at for you when seeing that was the result?
Yeah, I was pretty shocked. I mean, I know that there were some Vikings fans and writers wondering about whether or not Easton would start ahead of him, and I thought that was like pretty unlikely, but the whole idea that he would just be outright cut, that's kind of another level, and I didn't expect that happening at all. I was very surprised.
I guess I don't blame the Vikings for cutting him if they think that they're better off without him and that they can eat crow by chewing up the $3.5 million or whatever the dollar amount is for this year. I'm fine with it if they think they're going to be better off. But can we point the finger a little and say, like, yeah, man, this was a swing and a miss signing because this dude was supposed to be the rock, the constant in the rebuild of the offensive line when they picked him up last year?
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, there's, in either instance, it's going to end up being some sort of referendum on the FO because, either it was a pretty poor signing at the time or they were incorrect to let him go. It's probably not likely, that it was both a good signing and it was smart to let him go. It doesn't look good for the front office because, not only did they make this kind of the centerpiece of that free agency class, they sold it as, one of the potential fixes for that offensive line.
Whether we look at Arif, the draft, and I'm talking recent years, I guess I can't really put, like a timetable on it, but let's just say last 5, 6, 7 seasons, whatever. If we look at free agent signings, trades, and then the NFL draft, where does this rank to you as far as the Vikings just kind of whiffing on Alex Boone? Because, in essence, that's what it was.
If I was going to rank it among, like, other Vikings whiffs, I mean, it's below Christian Ponder, I guess. just to look at, like, recent whiffs and stuff like that. I would say it's probably below Cordarrelle Patterson. I would say it's relatively high, but not so high that I would list it in, my top five Vikings misses in free agency of the draft in, like, the past probably 10, 12 years. I mean, they had to re-sign Brett Favre as a free agent, too, in 2010. I think that counts.
Yeah, I'll count that one. I didn't think about that. But, yeah, see, when I was going through that yesterday, I had brought it up. Like, where does this rank for Vikings kind of swing and misses in the last few years? Like, I thought Ponder stole the cake, too. And then I was trying to find, like, where Boone would go, and I had him right around that sort of top five area. Having this happen about a week out from the opener to a projected starter on a line that was already putting fans on edge during the preseason, I mean, it doesn't exactly inject confidence into the fan base, does it?
No, it really doesn't. Although you'll find, a lot of fans, especially as the season starts, will be completely behind, sort of everything the front office does. And so, if they do something, there's a good reason for it. And maybe even there was a plan for it, although it's hard to imagine that, taking $3.5 million of dead cap is part of any plan. A lot of fans, that I've encountered and talked to are actually more confident, or, they would be confident no matter what, but they're using this as a reason to be confident because, the front office is bold and they make the right decisions. They don't really care, what they should be doing. They're doing what they what's right. And so, I think for a lot of fans, that doesn't project a lot of confidence, but, for a certain few, it's all the more reason to be confident.
Boone was never one either, and he still isn't. I shouldn't say past tense, like he's going to go to Arizona and change his ways. He's never been one to really, like, mince his words. He'll kind of just say what he feels or say what he thinks. And I love when athletes don't give us the generic answer. I love coaches who are different and they're outside the box and they don't give you the coach speak answer when you ask them a question in a presser. I did find it interesting, though. I feel like you have to pick your spots, whether you're a coach or an athlete. And I always thought Alex Boone picked some odd spots at times. Like, for instance, the Packers president, Mark Murphy, I'm going to be paraphrasing here, but he said something like, it would be nice to win the NFC and represent the conference in the Super Bowl this year in Minneapolis. And he might have been more direct or more kind of stirring the pot with whatever the direct quote was. But I know Alex Boone responded to that by saying, over my dead bleeping body. And I didn't mind that he said it, I guess, but I would have liked to hear that from someone else on the Vikings if they're going to go that route. Someone more substantial, I guess, who will have a larger impact than Alex Boone. So I don't mind when players speak their mind. I actually prefer it. But I always think you should pick your spots, and I always thought he kind of chose some odd points.
Right, well, it's, you know, it's every time you try to say something kind of explosive or you know, big or you know, whatever, you know, it's kind of like just swearing itself. You know, the more often you use it, the less power it has. And Boone, you know, is known for being outspoken, says something potentially every week that, you know, for most players would certainly be newsworthy. But because he says it so often, you know, it kind of just, oh, you know, Alex Boone said a thing. So it doesn't carry the same weight. And sometimes it just kind of adds to the overall feeling that you get from the player, which for a lot of Vikings fans was annoyance because, you know, at the beginning of the 2016 season, you know, he was talking just as much. But at the beginning, he wasn't playing all that well. He shored up his play a lot, but at the beginning, he wasn't playing all that well. So people kind of just got this, you know, he talks a big game, but he doesn't back it up. And so as he continues to talk a big game, you know, people just kind of get the feeling whether or not he's actually started to back it up. So, yeah, it would have been nice if it was somebody besides Alex Boone. Or, you know, if the Vikings had been 11-5 last year or something along that line. So, yeah, that's it's yeah, I think the messenger matters as much as the message, and you know, for Alex Boone, that's not great when he starts saying something that even Vikings fans would want to hear.
Yeah, it just kind of loses its flavor. Arif Hassan with us this afternoon, always enjoy his time with us, covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage in the Daily Norseman. All right, the entire roster was trimmed down, all 32 teams over this past weekend. Pertaining to the Vikings, outside of Alex Boone, what cuts or maybe dudes that squeaked out a spot on the roster caught your attention?
Yeah, I thought, you know, I'll start with the Bucky Hodges one because it kind of counts, kind of doesn't. So Bucky Hodges was waived, injured, and then put on injured reserve, and they brought Blake Bell, a converted quarterback from Oklahoma, to tight end. And I thought that was kind of interesting because, you know, it's one of those moves where, you know, I don't think the Vikings need to do that. They have, you know, the medical reason to put someone on IR, but I'm sure if they, you know, wanted to, they could have kept him, you know, on the roster. But they did it to retain the rights of Bucky Hodges and then also get the rights to another developmental tight end. But, you know, if they need a third tight end, say, in week 7, you know, I'm guessing Bucky Hodges is going to be a lot more useful than Blake Bell. So I found that really interesting. They also have Kyle Carter on the practice squad, so they could promote him instead. You know, that kind of stood out to me. The fact that, you know, the Vikings kept 5 defensive ends, at the end of the preseason we figured that they would, but it was nice to see that, you know, Tashaun Bauer, after such a strong performance, earned that spot. You know, we kind of expected Ben Gideon to win the weak side linebacker spot, but I thought it would be Edmund Robinson who would stay because he's got more developmental upside than Emmanuel Lemur. But he was just making too many mental mistakes. So, you know, those kind of made sense. By the end of camp, I'd figured that they might want to keep C.J. Ham because he's just been playing so well at fullback. That made sense to me, too. The bigger issues to me were, hey, you cut Taylor Heinicke. You know, I thought, you know, he had a pretty rough camp and he had a pretty rough, you know, third preseason game, but, you know, I thought he made up for it. I guess the Vikings, you know, weren't over the moon about him. You know, it sounds like they waived injured him too, but, you know, it sounds like he's also going to get an injury settlement and leave. And they got Kyle Sloter instead. So there were some interesting moves. They're all kind of overshadowed by this Boone thing. I'm sure I'm also just in this rundown in my head missing something pretty big.
You brought up a couple. I was going to ask about Bucky Hodges because I didn't know how that all worked out now with the waive but designated for IR, how that all worked, but no one scooped him up and he cleared waivers. I was high on Bucky Hodges when they drafted him, and I actually thought, and maybe I'm just blindly speaking here, he didn't, like, underperform or underwhelm during training camp or the preseason, did he? I actually thought he had his moments. He kind of flashed in certain spots.
Yeah, I don't think he had any big poor moments. They're all big good moments, right? And so it's pretty easy to just figure, well, hey, you know, he's somebody who's getting a lot of interest. You know, he'd been consistently showing up and, you know, media reports about training camp and stuff like that, I thought they'd, you know, sign him because it sounded like he'd been consistently good. You know, and I thought so, too. He did have a lot of problems blocking. I noticed a couple of times that, you know, with the second team and the third team, that, you know, he would give up a lot of tackles for loss. But I didn't think that they were so severe that, you know, he shouldn't be on the roster or anything like that. So it's pretty surprising to me. But I think it was just they wanted to retain the rights to as many developmental tight ends as possible. Maybe they're preparing, you know, for Kyle Rudolph to leave, and they want to see if, you know, either one of Blake Bell, Bucky Hodges, or Kyle Carter might be able to take the role. And that's just speculation, but it certainly sounds like they're collecting developmental tight ends.
Vikings also went out and made some noise over the weekend. They acquired Tremaine Brock. How does he fit in? Is he a base defense guy, a nickel guy, outside, inside? What do you envision with Tremaine Brock?
So I think that the Vikings will want him in the nickel because they're much more confident in Trey Waynes than Mackenzie Alexander. But for the most part, Brock himself, his career has been on the outside. And he's been, you know, a really good cornerback on the outside. He's kind of one of those names that's always really good, not quite Pro Bowl caliber, you know, type player. And he's been sort of in sort of the top 20 conversation for cornerbacks, where if you have that guy as your number two, you know, a really, really good spot. You're not even in that bad of a spot if he's your number one. So I like him on the outside, and I think that if you have him on the outside, you're probably in a good spot. But there's so much worry and concern about what's happening in the nickel spot. I don't think Trey Waynes can play there, so you can't just bump him inside. That, you know, I think that that's kind of the plan for him. I have a lot more long-term confidence in Alexander than Waynes, although that's been kind of tested given training camp and the offseason. So I would like to see, you know, I think it's probably a better situation if Alexander grabs the spot and Brock plays on the outside, but I just don't see that happening. Yeah, I think that's kind of the plan for him. I mean, he's a starting quality cornerback, but, you know, he only got traded for a seventh-round pick because, you know, despite how good his contract is, he's, you know, toxic for other reasons. It'll take him a little bit, evidently, according to the Vikings, to get, you know, with the playbook and recovery from an injury, but I expect he'll be starting soon.
Arif Hasan with us this afternoon on the Blitz. Find his work, zonecoverage.com, and through the Daily Norseman. We finally get to preview a regular season game. We will not catch up again until post-Monday Night Football. Vikings open up that doubleheader. I think it's a 6 p.m. kickoff against the Saints, who come to US Bank Stadium. I guess first, can I get an Adrian Peterson prediction for the game? I'm assuming his role with the Saints. I would imagine he's playing behind Mark Ingram. And I guess if I keep layering on now, Arif, if I'm Mark Ingram, I'm ticked off. Like, the dude ran for 1,000 yards last year. I think he has shown that he could be a three-down back, and the Saints just always filter in, like, multiple running backs and get multiple dudes involved in the running game. Like, if I'm Mark Ingram, I'm not, like, thrilled. He's going to embrace it, and I'm sure he's not going to say, oh, well, they went out and got Adrian Peterson. But I'm not, like, thrilled with that signing if I'm Mark Ingram after I had the year I had a year ago.
Yeah, it is pretty common for the Saints, which is also why I don't think Adrian Peterson's going to be, you know, part of the central game plan for them. You know, they, you know, Pierre Thomas, Travaris Gredet, Chris Ivory, you know, they keep on bringing in these running backs and splitting the load, despite the fact that some of them are genuinely talented enough to play on their own. And so I'm sure Mark Ingram's pretty ticked off, but I don't think that's any different. Like, I'm sure he also kind of expected it, given just sort of how the Saints have operated over the past couple of years. So, yeah, it's kind of annoying. But I think that he kind of gets it, and he kind of gets that the Saints are always just going to be this committee system. I mean, they draft a rookie, and they sign Adrian Peterson. I mean, it's just pretty likely that they want to, you know, split the load a little bit. And I'm sure he'll land somewhere and put together another two or three good years. But it's going to hurt his chances for a second contract, and it's going to hurt his ability to kind of make an impact on the game in sort of your early years as a running back. You know, as for Adrian Peterson, like you said, you know, Mark Ingram is the feature back, and Adrian Peterson is one of the backups. I don't even know if he's a primary backup with Alvin Kamara, you know, doing pretty well in the offseason and in the preseason and offering a little bit more versatility as a pass catcher. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see you know, Adrian Peterson only gets something like 8 carries and maybe, you know, 1 or 2 targets. So, yeah, I don't know that he'll figure to be a big part of the game plan. I think he's definitely more headline than he is anything else.
Is there a matchup you really like for the Vikings against New Orleans, one you think they should be able to take advantage of?
Yeah, you know, they move Michael Thomas around a lot. So, you know, if New Orleans finds a way to free Michael Thomas of Xavier Rhodes, maybe put him in the slot where he did pretty well last year, you know, I think that he'll probably feast. I know that Michael Thomas has become so popular in fantasy circles that a lot of people even saw him as kind of a first-round fantasy pick. And he's an extremely good receiver. He's my favorite receiver in the draft. The Saints kind of did a really good job, you know, maximizing his value and stuff like that. So I think that's a really, really good, just good matchup in general. You know, the tight end situation, they've got Josh Hill, and you know he shows up at times. And the only reason I mention the tight end situation at all is because I'm really concerned about, you know, Ben Gideon in coverage and whether or not Anthony Barr is back to who he was. You know, and whoever that tight end is, they've also got Kobe Fleener, of course. Whoever that tight end is might be able to take advantage of, you know, whether or not Anthony Barr has come back completely or whether or not Ben Gideon is out there at the weak side linebacker. So those are probably the two matchups for them that I would be most interested in exploiting. If not, if you don't want to move Michael Thomas into the slot, you could have Ted Ginn in the slot running deep routes, and we'll see what happens there.
What about from the Vikings' perspective? What can they exploit on the New Orleans side of things and try to take advantage of?
Sure. Well, I think that you know, the Vikings, they've got kind of an interesting linebacker core to play against. So you could run a couple of those two tight end sets kind of just on the other side of the ball with Kyle Rudolph and David Morgan underneath. And I think that you could probably take advantage of a lot of confusion that they have at tight end. I don't know that they've got, or at linebacker, I don't think that they've got like a really good answer there. So I think that it wouldn't be surprising to see the Vikings doing well. And I've always been a little bit concerned about that secondary. They've done a lot in recent years to make it a lot better. They've got Marcus Williams, Marshon Lattimore, Von Bell, and those guys were just drafted over the past 2 years. So it's a young secondary. Kenny Vaccaro is the most experienced one out of them. And I would definitely be willing to see sort of, you know, what sort of more complex route combinations or what you can do to try and confuse a young secondary. You know, players that play, you know, with a lot of brain games, like Stephon Diggs, like Adam Thielen, I think that they could probably do a lot to that young secondary. It's a defense where I think that the defensive line is something I'm concerned about, but everything else is a question mark. So there's a lot of potentially good matchups for the Vikings, so long as that offensive line can hold up.
Let's finish with our off notes. We've got a few to hit on today. My favorite names in the NFL, like legitimate names for players, I should have written these down. HaHa Clinton Dix, Ziggy Hood is a good one, Vontez Burfict, and Amir Reef, they've all been trumped by the Chargers' new kicker who made the squad. It just the spelling of it, it is spelled young. I don't want to get in hot water here. I know you've seen it. Can I throw you into the oncoming traffic and try to pronounce his name? Because I know it's not pronounced how it looks, and how it looks is something that could be a little dicey to say. I'm going to lob you in.
It looks like a youth gardening instrument. I don't know what the thing is. So I actually don't know how to pronounce it.
I think it's Young Huey is how it was.
Young Huey? Okay.
I think so. Yeah. I just know it's because the first thing I said is, wow, I hope that his name is pronounced how it looks. And he also has, like, this dude just looks electric. There's a video out of him, like, kicking a ball and getting it to spin on its own, and then he kicks it through the uprights and then does a backflip, like, all in one motion. It's incredible. I just looked at it when I saw he made the team for the Chargers, and I was over Josh Lambeau, and he immediately became like a must-draft kicker, too good to pass up in fantasy formats. And then I had to look to see how the name was actually pronounced, and I think it is Young Huey is how it's pronounced.
So I just looked at it. It's Young Way.
Young Way. Oh, okay. So there, yeah. So,
yeah, so like, no confusion at all there.
Yeah, it's Young-Way. That's how you were saying it, Young Way.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. I viewed him as a must draft guy, but then one of my buddies, when kickers started going at the tail end of our draft, took him before I could scoop him up. So I was kind of upset. Speaking of upset, we'll transition as seamlessly as possible. I found it odd seeing that people were upset about the Dolphins-Buccaneers scheduling situation. Like, there's a hurricane potentially barreling down on the coast of Florida, and I'm wondering where the perspective is for some people. They have the same bye week. The game was placed there. I think it was week 11. Doesn't matter. It was placed in both teams' bye weeks, which come on the same week later on in the season. I just found it odd that some people seem to be prioritizing where this game was played, when it was going to be played, over a hurricane that could be barreling down the east coast of Florida.
Yeah, I think that for a lot of people, there's this perception that there is a perfect solution to some problems, and sometimes there are not. You know, I was looking at some of the responses that people had to these announcements, and they're like, well, you know, that's really unfair. And it's like, yeah, it is. Hurricanes are unfair. I don't know what else to tell you. It's like there's no, you can't like file a grievance with a hurricane. It's just unfair. And I know a lot of people were like, well, you know, you could schedule a neutral site game. You could schedule one in Carolina. You could schedule one in, because I think Carolina has an away game. Or yeah, they named a couple of, you know, southern NFL stadiums where the teams had away games. I think that people just think those stadiums just kind of sit empty and perfectly maintained, ready for use for people to just kind of drop in and use. And, you know, the NFL is the biggest game in town, but they can't just move people off of their schedules. I'm sure that they called around. You know, they probably even called all the way up north to St. Louis. They tried to figure out, you know, what they could do for these neutral sites, but it's a logistical nightmare for a ton of reasons. They can only use NFL stadiums because the referees are required to use the replay system that only exists with an infrastructure that exists inside NFL stadiums. And a lot of those NFL stadiums have alternate events going on. That's the only way that you can sell these stadiums to the cities in the first place. And so on away games, they tend to be, you know, fairly booked up for whatever, and you can't just kick them out. And then there's just additional logistical nightmares. Even if you get, you know, if you secure the stadium, it's not always like what happened when the Metrodome collapsed and the Vikings were able to play in Detroit. Sometimes it's just much more difficult for a ton of reasons. So I know people were like, well, just schedule it somewhere else. Like, it's just that easy, but it's not always that easy. And then, what do you do then? Well, then they've got the same bye week. It's perhaps the most elegant thing that's happened in response to something so sticky is that, you know, there was this mutual bye week that they could use together. And it's definitely, you know, the better of the two options, no football or, because, you know, hurricane football is not an option. So it's no football or scheduled on the bye week. And, I mean, 16 weeks is not ideal, but, like, playing in a hurricane is pretty less ideal.
I agree. Well, we'll wrap it up on this. You polluted my Twitter timeline with comedy last night as I was scrolling along. It would appear that you opened up your DMs. How's that been going?
You know, for people with thick skin, I highly recommend it. It's very entertaining. Otherwise, don't. You don't always get maybe the best collection of people. I opened up my DMs, and someone with, like, two tweets, you know, DM'd me and was like, yeah, where's your follow back? And I was like, well, I don't follow back everyone. I'm not going to follow you back. And he just kind of escalated and became increasingly rude. It's better to see it. It's just such a bizarre conversation. I've never had someone be so rude to me and then, like, demand things of me. Like, it's just like, why would I do this for you? There's no reason that you're just, like, I don't know, man. It's weird.
I'm trying to find it. Where's that? I don't want to call it the, here it is. They message you, you're going to follow back or what? And you just said no. And why is that? Not sarcastically negative enough. And then they keep going on and on and saying that your follow was crucial. I love that line when they said you following them was crucial for their Twitter, you know, like, presence on social media. That was the line where I lost it and couldn't stop laughing.
Right, because I asked, like, who are you? And they're like, someone who knows way more about the Vikings than you or Wabi or Paul, probably in reference to Paul Allen. And I was like, well, great, then you don't need me to follow you. It sounds like you're set. And he's like, no, you don't understand. This is crucial.
Yeah, it's great stuff. By the way, follow him. Find his work at zonecoverage.com. Follow him on Twitter at Arif Hassan NFL. Time's always appreciated, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
More next year on the Blitz.